beautiful Lord's Day it is, and it's great to see you here. Thankful for the opportunity we have now at this time to open God's Word together. We have a lot of folks that are visiting with us, and we are honored to have you, whether you're passing through or new to the area. We thank you for coming our way. One of the things that our folks know I like to start with are a few smiles of the week. And this is one of those that from our recent mission trip to Rainbow Omega and working with the Talladega Church, and just a great time was had by all, and several of our folks and good works that were done there. Celebrate a few happy anniversaries. I believe this was the big 5-0. Is that correct? Is that right, Jerry? Man, oh man, she is a saint. Isn't that a beautiful? I love the back and forth there. And then a few other anniversaries, like 3 or 4 weeks on the Dardens there, and then 11 years and celebrating. And then also Bill and Susan had an anniversary today, and I couldn't find a picture. I couldn't believe it. And then the bars and the throwback photos, and happy anniversary, Mr. Ruiz. See, she's not with you today. I'm kind of concerned, okay? I thought we made it. Okay, no, just kidding. So glad for them. Then a few birthdays and some celebrations that we always love to think about. And then this smile. Oh my goodness. We got some of the cutest kids in the world here. What a blessing. What a blessing. And thank you for having them here. Because the greatest thing you can do in investing in the lives of your kids, whether it's church camp that's coming up this week, or whether it's Bible class or vacation Bible school or mission trips, it's investing in their walk with the Lord. It's the only thing that they'll take out of this life. It's the only thing. And so into that, I want us to step into the thought of what we will be kind of looking at over really the next few weeks. But it's the idea of living ready. Live ready. You know, I mean, you think about, I just think back on this week for myself, and this past Wednesday, my mentor and dear friend of 16 plus years, we've known each other for over 30 years. We've worked together for over 16, and was just walking around his house, and his heart stopped. And fortunately, he had on his Apple Watch, and his watch called his wife, and his wife looked at the phone, and there was nobody answering, and she thought, well, what's going on? And she looks out the window, and she sees him laying in the grass, and she runs to him, yells. There was a neighbor who, by the providence and grace of God, was having her car worked on, because normally she would have been at the hospital working in ICU, and she came over and did CPR with the wife, and they airlifted him, and a lot of touch and go, but we're thankful to say that he's doing well now. Lot still, you know, 6 broken ribs, if that's good. But the reality was, I kept thinking about that. And one of the things that I can just hear Jim say is, hey, don't do CPR on me. I'm ready. He's like, I'm ready. I'm leaving this stall with you. You know, I know where I'm headed. And that's his attitude about life, and he's a great servant. But I'm thinking to myself, nobody wakes up in the morning and thinks, I'm going to walk around my front yard and my heart's going to stop. But for Jim, it would not have mattered because he was living ready. Every day he wakes up, and it's, I have one goal, one purpose, and that one goal and one purpose is to glorify and honor God with my life. I'm a child of God. I'm a brother of Jesus Christ. And I am here, and I'm going to live ready. And so as we study today from Matthew chapter 24, I want you to think about that with me for a few moments. Now, we got to start with this. How many of you have heard people talk about the end of times before? The end times, and we're in the end times. And you look at all these, there are movies that have been made, and there are books that have been written, and it's all about the end time and the end time. And you think about what's coming, and people are fascinated with the end of time. And I think about that, and I think, you know, that's understandable, because we ought to be. There's a sense in which we ought to have this as our focus in living, because it does matter. Now, when you think about this topic, every time there's a new war in the Middle East, Every time there's a major earthquake or some weird type of a weather pattern or something somewhere in the world, every time there's a pandemic or something shuts down, the searches go up. And when you think about, for us today, that question, are you ready? I want you to think, this is a question that comes into our mind. This is a question we have. I want you to know and understand that, because this curiosity is there. I get it. Because at the root of it is something that is deeply human. We all want to know what is coming. We want to feel prepared. We want to know that the chaos of this world is ending and that God wins. And we deep down know that. And we want to have an awareness and an alertness of that. That's not bad. That's actually biblical. But here's the thing. That curiosity has been hijacked. And sometimes by well-meaning people who take this chapter, and it's one of the most important and significant chapters, and they misread it and misapply it. And I think it's pretty simple if you just read what Jesus is speaking to. Maybe you've grown up and you've heard this chapter over and over, and you've heard it as a roadmap to the end of the world, a checklist of signs, a prophetic calendar of something that you could hold up next to today's newspaper and say, see, we're almost there. It's almost time. I want to tell you, I had a few years ago, I had the privilege of sitting in a class during a vacation Bible school with Judge Alan Hyers. And Judge Hyers was a tremendous scholar, sat on just a tremendous Bible scholar. And he taught on this chapter, and he shared with me something in that class that I have never forgotten. And it's really the basis of our conversation today, as well as some things Greg Lawrence and I have talked about, a class that he did on Revelation, and some of the things that, some materials that he shared with me as well, but very helpful. But what I want you to think about is this. Several years ago, people have been doing this for years. This was a book that was a bestseller back in the early 70s and 80s, and it was this Hal Lindsey's A Late Great Planet Earth, and it was a prediction that he said, I believe that when the nation of Israel starts, it's going to be one generation until the end of the world. And the time was 1988. There was even a book, 101 Reasons Why the End of the World is 1988. And you know, I can just give you one. Do y'all know why he was wrong? Because we're here. It didn't end in 1988. And even though there were all these reasons and all this conjecture about whatever and this, that was his focus, but that was not it. The wrong date isn't the problem. I think missing the point is. And so what I want us to think about is, what does Matthew 24 say? Not from looking at it and predicting a time of when the Lord's coming, but what is it saying? What is Jesus saying? And I want us to walk through it together today and just hopefully simplify something that many have made a very confusing conversation. Now let's go to the beginning of Live Ready. Here's the scene. The scene is Jesus leaving the temple. We remember He's just delivered the seven woes to the religious Pharisees and the people in the temple. He's had this incredible moment where he's, verse 36 in chapter, as he's prayed and wept over Jerusalem, 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 you who kill the prophets and stone those sent to you, how I've longed to gather you. That beautiful prayer of Jesus at the end of the chapter in chapter 23. Look, your house is left to you desolate. For you will not see me again until you say, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. And Jesus left the temple. And walking away, when his disciples came to him and called to his attention all of its buildings. This was the most magnificent place in all of history. It was one of the wonders of the world. It was incredible. And they're saying, Jesus, look at all this stuff. Look at these buildings. Look at all these things. These things. I want you to cue in on that phrase, these things. He asked, and Jesus says to them, truly I tell you, not one stone here will be left on another. Everyone will be thrown down. There's the prophecy. As Jesus is sitting on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately. Again, this mount would be looking back over the Temple Mount. They would have been at a different location, but you could still see where they had just been. And Jesus was sitting there with them, and they said, "Tell us, when will these things happen? And what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age?" I want you to notice this, that there are two questions that are asked here in Matthew chapter 24 by the disciples. Two questions. When will these things be? And what will be the sign of your coming and the end of the age? Two questions. And the rest of this discussion is set up by the outline of the questions that have been asked. So, this is where we begin today. Two questions. One about the temple. When are these things that you're saying? Not one stone left on the other. When are these things? And the other, when will be the sign of your coming? Now, it is possible the disciples may have assumed if Jerusalem is destroyed, it's got to be the end of time. But that's not what they ask. And so we think about this, and whatever they assume, there are two questions Jesus answers here. So the reason Matthew 24 has caused so much confusion is that people have read it as one long answer to one question, and they've applied all of it to the second coming of Jesus. But when you see the two questions, I think it's going to help you track through this whole thing. So let's begin. Let's begin. The first one is this. Jesus begins answering in verse 4. Now, again, I want you to kind of cue in on this, all these things. It's a thread you're going to see throughout the first 34 chapter. All these things. When will these things happen? They ask him. And he says, there's not going to be one stone left on the other. When shall these things happen? When you shall see all these things, know that it is near. The generation will not pass till these things are fulfilled. And so this is a continuous thread through the whole study, okay? These things. Now, go back and look. What is it time? Every time you see all of these things, we're referring to the question at the first part of the chapter. Jesus talking about the same thing. The destruction of Jerusalem and of the temple. And that's a thread that goes all the way through. So what are the signs that Jesus gives as to the destruction of Jerusalem and of the temple? What are they? What are the first questions that you're going to see? And he's going to talk about wars and rumors of wars and nations rising against nations and famines and pestilence and earthquakes and various things. Persecution of the believers, false messiahs, false prophets. All of these things, sin abounding, the love of many growing cold, actually things that you could take and plug into just about any generation that has ever lived. But specifically, it plugs in to the generation to which he's speaking. And here's where a lot of times those that are focused in that end time speculation go wrong. They read the list and they say, look, this is, we got wars today, we've got earthquakes, it's the end of times. But friends, these things have been happening, again, since the beginning of time. Notice in verse 6, he says it this way. He says, oh my eyes, you will hear of wars and rumors of wars, but see to it that none of you, that you are not alarmed. Such things must happen, but the end is still to come. Nations rise against nations. So the idea that these things have been happening and going on, this is not new. And here's what he says in verse, 14 that's important, I think, as you look at this. He says, and the gospel of the kingdom will be preached to the whole world as a testimony to all the nations, then the end will come. Now this is important because as you go back and you look at the book of Colossians, in Colossians chapter 1, verse 23, somebody says, well, I don't know, has the world heard all the world heard the gospel? Well, according to the Apostle Paul, Paul says, if you continue in your faith, established and firm, do not move from the hope held out in the gospel. And this is the gospel that you heard and that has been proclaimed to every creature under heaven, of which I, Paul, have become a servant. Paul says that the gospel had been preached to every creature under heaven in the first century. And so we look at that and we go, well, that's been fulfilled. Well, what's next? What's next? Well, look in verse 15. He talks about this idea. When you see standing in the holy place the abomination that causes desolation spoken of through the prophet Daniel, let the reader understand. And then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let no one on the housetop go down or take anything out of the house. Let no one in the field go back to their cloak. How dreadful it would be in those days for a pregnant woman or for nursing mothers. Guys, if Jesus is talking about the end of the times in this chapter, in this moment, why would it matter if you're pregnant when the Lord comes back? Why would it matter if you were a nursing mother when Jesus returns? Why would it matter if it's the winter time of the year? See, what Jesus is doing is Jesus is giving cues to these folks of a alert. It's like a fire alarm being pulled, except you're getting a prophecy from the Son of God. The city of Jerusalem is going to be destroyed, and you're going to have the ticket out if you'll pay attention to the signs. And you know what? The Christians did. We'll walk through just a little bit of history in a moment, but I want you to think about you see this phrase, this idea of the abomination. I'm working two clickers. That's a crazy thing to try to do. The abomination of desolation. In Luke's version of the same text, you're going to see Luke explain it in this way and clarify it for us. What is the abomination of desolation? Verse 20 of Luke. When you see Jerusalem has been surrounded by armies, you will know that its desolation is near. Then let all who are in Judea flee to the mountains, and let those in the cities get out, and let those in the country not enter the city. Jesus is giving a warning to his followers. And so we look at that. Why is it referred to as the abomination of desolation? Well, when you think about the things that would happen, and this was something that Greg had shared that's kind of important to kind of flesh out, Jesus has already condemned the leaders of Jerusalem. Romans were going to come in carrying in their own gods, their own idols, their form of pagan worship, and they were going to defile the holy city even further beyond even than just destroying it. That's the abomination. The desolation would be total. When the Romans were finished, the only thing left standing on the Temple Mount would be a portion of a retaining wall, which the Romans, some thought, had left deliberately to just kind of indicate how massive this place was. If that was just the wall, imagine what the temple was before. Gone. So here's what I want to kind of see. Flee. Let them which be in Judea flee into the mountain. And if this were the end of the world, where would you flee to? Now, I want you to think about a little bit of history. I'm not a history guy very much. I don't do this. But again, I appreciate the help that kind of came with this lesson. And so, this is documented history. Jewish historian Josephus has given a detailed account of these things, and I want you to think about it. In AD 66, the Jews revolted against the Roman governor Florus. And in that, the responsibility fell to Cestus Gallus, the governor of Syria. He was a civil administrator, no military experience, but he laid siege on Jerusalem. Basically, he's kind of got it locked down. And he's there, and this is going on, and yet, after a period of time, so some say months, some say weeks, but there was a period of time, and he withdraws. And those that were in the Jewish revolt aside of it, they like claimed victory because Gallus had suffered a lot of loss. And many prophets arose in that time saying this was a sign from God that Israel should attack Rome and that they should triumph and be victorious, that God was orchestrating the destruction or downfall of Rome. But again, you go back and you see kind of what happened. AD 67, Vespasian marches to Judea with some 60,000 soldiers. Nero, the Roman emperor, kills himself, and so there is no emperor, there are four emperors. And that's confusing. And so Titus is taking command of the siege of Jerusalem. And then in AD 70, they have come back and they've conquered the city and the temple burns. And again, as the scripture says, there's not one stone left on another one. Now, it's important as you look at verse 21 to 28, this is kind of that mid-range. He says, in those days, for there had been great distress, unequaled from the beginning of the world to now. Some versions will say the great tribulation, and that's a key word, but he's referring to what is happening in Jerusalem, okay? And let me tell you what that looked like. There were factions inside this where they're, Rome is surrounding them, not only attacking, but cutting everything off from Jerusalem. And so there were some zealots, and they thought it would be a great idea to burn all of the grain bins to force our people to fight and to take up arms. So not only did they burn that, and not only that happened, but they started this famine within Jerusalem, and people were starving, and it was brutal. People were killing one another over food. There were even scenarios where mothers created a cannibalistic situation, to put it nicely, for our little people, and it was just terrible, the things that happened there. And so, again, people were just devastated. And you think about, there were some, Josephus talks about some million that would die in this context. That's, I think, the tribulation that Jesus is speaking to here. And so they remembered when the city was surrounded, the Christians remembered, and again, they fled to a place called Pella. They did exactly what Jesus had said, and according to Eusebius, one of the early church historians, very few, if any, followers of Jesus died in the fall of Jerusalem. That's significant. You look at this and you think, man, this is what Jesus was telling them, and they listened. And one of the things that you're going to find in this text in 29 to 30, there is immediately this distress of those days. The sun will be darkened. The moon will not give it light. Stars will fall from the skies. The heavenly bodies will be shaken. And the Son of Man will appear, the sign of the Son of Man in heaven. And all the people of the earth will mourn. And this scene is there. And what you have as he's describing this, as you're seeing this picture of this great tribulation, you're seeing these things that have already happened. But one of the things I want to point out is this phrasing, sun and stars and darkness, all this stuff is from the prophets. Anytime they were predicting something, they used verbiage like this. They used this imagery. For instance, again, as you look back, Isaiah 13, the prophet is describing the fall of Babylon. He's not talking about the end of the world. He's talking about a national power falling. And here's what he says, Isaiah 13, 10, "For the stars of heaven and the constellations thereof shall not give their light. The sun shall be darkened in his going forth, and the moon shall not cause her light to shine." Nearly word for word of what Jesus has said in Matthew 24, talking about Jerusalem. In Isaiah 34, he talks about the nation of Edom. And he says this, the destruction, "All the host of heaven shall be dissolved, and the heavens shall be rolled together as a scroll." In Ezekiel, you see the same thing talked about Egypt, in the judgment on Egypt. "I will cover the heavens and make the stars thereof dark, and I will cover the sun and the clouds, and the moon shall not give her light." Do you see the pattern? The pattern is when God brings judgment on a nation, prophets described it in cosmic terms. That was a big thing. God was moving in history, and a power was being toppled. And the world, as you know it, is going to come to an end. And to the Jewish audience hearing this, on that occasion, on that hillside, they would have immediately thought of the prophets. They would have thought of Isaiah 19, verse 1, speaking of the judgment of Egypt. When the scriptures, the prophet said, "Behold, the Lord rideth upon a swift cloud, and shall come into Egypt, and the Lord is coming on the clouds." That's a prophetic message, an image of God's judgment arriving on people. Jesus used that same imagery of Egypt. Now here's the thing. The destruction of Jerusalem was AD 70, and it wasn't just a military event. It was one of those turning points where Jews had been so troubling to the movement of Christ, the religious leaders, there were many followers of Jesus who were Jews and became Jews, but that institution had been such an adversarial opponent of Christianity, threatening to drag the church back under the law, and all those things Paul would write to throughout the New Testament about the Jewish-Gentile relationship over and over. And so that was a huge thing, but this was a huge, more than just a military event. And so I want you to think about that. Never in history has there been something with this kind of theological significance. But here's the key verse. It's in Matthew 24, 34, when he says, "Verily I say unto you, this generation shall not pass until all these things have been fulfilled." So we're talking about verse 1, and we're all the way now to verse 34, and Jesus has talked about all these signs and all these things, and he said, and you're living right here. This generation is not going to pass until everything I've just told you has taken place. You're going to be here, and I hope you're paying attention, but this is it. And it did. Within 40 years, the city of Jerusalem would be destroyed. And so, this generation. But, right in the middle of the conversation, in verse 36, you have this word, but. And this is the point in which Jesus turns to the second question. Right? Here's where we go into the next slide. But of that day. All right, he goes from talking about these things and this place, these things and the city and the stone destruction. But of that day. What was the second question? Second question is, Lord, when's the end of time? When are you coming back? When's judgment going to happen on the world? But of that day and hour knoweth no man, not even the angels in heaven, but my Father only. Do you feel that shift? Everything the first 34 verses have been pointing to, these things, plural, the days, plural, signs that you could watch for, plural, markers that would tell you the time was near, evacuation instructions for people, but of that day and hour knoweth no man. Not the angels, not the Son, but only the Father. That day. Here's the answer to the second question. Nobody knows. When's the Lord coming back? Oh, we got to get it all figured out. We got to know. Son of God said, you're not going to know. Nobody knows. The point is not figuring out when He comes so you can get ready right before it happens. The point is, we need to live ready all the time. This is the most significant thing you can ever do with your life, is following Jesus and staying committed to Him. And what we must do is live ready. And He looks at this from this standpoint and the two responses, and you can see, be ready. And the first is destruction, it's signs, it's things. The message is flee, get out. But for the second coming of Jesus, there are no signs, no warning. The message is be ready. And that's where the chapter will end, as he talks about the day and the hour being unknown. Therefore, you keep watch. Keep watch. Be prepared. Be ready. For you don't know the day and the hour He comes. Verse 44, so you must also be ready. It's like a thief coming in the night. Man, if I knew a thief was coming, I'd be sitting up ready. But we don't anticipate it. We're not paying attention. It's something that happens when we weren't thinking about it. That's why living ready is such an important thing for us. And so I think about that, and I look at that, and I want us to think about that. He goes on and he says, let me illustrate it for you. It's like it was in the days of Noah. They didn't know when the flood came. He said, the second coming of God is not going to be telegraphed. No charts, no countdown, no calendars, as it was in the days of Noah, so it will be at the coming of the Son of Man. Watch, therefore. Watch. Be ready. Keep watch. And then verse 45 says this, Then who then is faithful? Who's the faithful and the wise servant whom the master has put in charge of the servants of his household? To give them their food at the proper time, it will be good for that servant who the master finds him doing so when he returns. Truly, I tell you, he'll be put in charge of all of his possessions. Suppose the servant is wicked and says to him, my master is staying away a long time. He begins to beat his fellow servants and eat and drink like with the drunkards. And the master of that servant will come on that day when he does not expect him and at the hour he is not aware, and he will cut him to pieces and assign him a place with the hypocrites where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. You see, the message of Matthew 24 is not that we can know so we can get ready when we start seeing all these signs. The message is, this is the most important thing you can do with your life. Live ready right now, because we don't know when the Lord's coming. Live ready. This is something we should all seek to do. Nobody knows. Live ready. The thief doesn't call ahead. Live ready. The danger of watching this obsession with all of the signs. And I've seen guys preach on TV with charts all the way across this wall about signs and this and that. And it's all Jesus says nobody knows. I appreciate people that can go through all that, but Jesus said you're not going to know. The signs he's talking about in Matthew 24 were pointing to the destruction of Jerusalem. You see, we need to be ready. Faithful servant wasn't the one who figured out when. It was the one who kept doing his job, who kept living faithfully, doing, so doing, the scripture says, faithful, present, working, living like it matters. All day, every day. Readiness. So the only question that matters is really this for us this morning. If Jesus came back today, would you be ready? Would you be ready? Not because you've got a timeline figured out, but because you've been living the way He asked. Because you've been looking forward to the day of His coming. You see, that's the only thing that matters, is about the connection that you have made to Christ. That what Jesus did at the cross has totally changed your life. That following Him makes you a different person. It makes you better by the knowing Him and trying to be like Him has changed who we are. But if it hasn't, I don't know if you're ready. Jesus changes people. That's what He came to do. It wasn't just to get us to anticipate something we're watching and figuring out. No, He came to change your life and change your heart. And the people who are ready are going to be people with a Christ-like connection, who have made through faith, who have been immersed into water, who have been united with Christ, so that one day when He comes back, He will know them. You won't hear the phrase, depart from me, I know you not. But rather, well done, good and faithful servant. Enter in. You know, this is one of those intense chapters, and there's a lot to it, and I encourage you to go back and read it again on your own. But the thing that I most want to encourage you is to think about your soul this morning. And to think about that thought. What if, as we're sitting here, we hear the trumpet call of God? And the light that began to shine in through that window on my right began to be intense as it came through, because the Son of God was returning in the clouds. Would you be ready? And if you're not, why not? The greatest gift that's ever been given was given on your behalf, and it was the death of the Son of God, that you could have your sins forgiven, that you could be washed, made new in the blood of Jesus Christ, that you could live your life wholly for Him, on purpose, with a purpose, and making a difference in this world around us because we're living like Jesus. The question is, are you ready? Are you ready? The Lord's ready. If you're ready to respond to Him, He's ready. Don't wait. Don't think I'll get this right later. I'll do this later. No, He's coming back. If He's coming back right now, are you ready? there's any way we can encourage you, if you need to pray with one of our shepherds, they'll be around the room. They'll be down front. If there's someone you need to talk privately with, maybe it's time for you to make all things ready as together we stand and as we sing.